Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist, and I'd like to welcome you to our show. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Laura. I'm Kate Hensler. I'm called a developmental interventionist, and I work for a program in Kentucky called First Steps.
And we are here tonight to finish up the show that we started last week. Tonight is Thursday, February 5th, 2009, and if you're listening, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Who needs a speech therapist tonight, huh?
Listening live? Was that what you're
listening
you're
live? That's what I was going for. We're so glad to have you join us tonight for this show because we're going to finish the topic that we started last week. Facilitating language in your everyday routines with your toddler and with your young preschooler who may be having language delays. And I want to go ahead and say that we're having a guest tonight. A special guest is coming on in about 45 minutes to talk to us about her new book. It's called The Big Book of Exclamations, and she's a fellow speech-language pathologist. And she sent me this great book that's brand new on the market, and we won't talk about it now, but I'm so excited that she was able to accept my invitation to join us at the very last minute tonight. She was really gracious about that, so I will be excited when she calls in about 45 minutes, so that'll be a real treat.
But that doesn't have to be our only call-in. We love call-ins from parents or caregivers of young children, whether they have language delays or not. If you're interested in talking about what might help to get your child talking a little sooner, please call. We'd love to hear from you.
Do you have the number, Kate?
I do, but I'm not in front of it. I was afraid when I said that you might bring that up. Okay. Yes, I do have the number, and that number is 1-718-766-4332. Please give us a call.
We'd love to hear from you. Okay, so let's review a little bit that we talked about last week. Again, we're talking about working language into everyday routines. We talked about waking up in the morning, how to do language during diaper change, the kinds of things we work on at that time. We also talked about working language into dressing, into bath time, into snacks and meals. And we also talked about using language during cleanup time to really focus on your child's comprehension skills and ways to work on that at that time. Tonight, I wanted us to talk about those other little things that we do that aren't the major activities in our day, but the things that we all do from day to day or several times in a week. That would be like things you could do when you're in the car. We're going to talk about using books a little later when Terry calls, but playing outside, those other little things that kind of come up, and what to do maybe in the grocery store, ideas to keep your kid engaged and not running all over the place or screaming and crying and being a total distraction to those around you. And again, working in ways that you can really help keep a child learning language all day long despite your very busy schedule. Okay, let's see. Which of those do you think we should tackle first tonight, Kate?
Well, let me give my, I don't know what to call it, my reminder to people listening and thinking about this topic. I did it last week. I'm going to do it again because I tend to get done with the show and think, that was an important point. And that point was, one, to keep your language very simple. Laura always says, just one step above where a child is as far as what they're saying. And also to keep it very, very repetitive. Kids love repetition, and the more you say it's the same and the more often you use the same words, the more meaningful it becomes and the more likely they are to imitate you and then begin to use those words on their own. So there's my little, I don't know what you'd call it, reminder.
So. Well, and that's very good to review. And I love what you said about repetition because cognitively, that's how all of us learn anything. We rarely get something on the first pop around, or me anyway. And so little kids' brains work that way too. First of all, our brains are, and I learned this from a great book called Bright Start. I can't remember the author of that book, but it's on the website if you want to search go to my website at teachmetotalk.com and type in Bright Start. I know I wrote an article about that last year. But it really talked about that our brains are kind of wired two different ways. One is to really seek novelty, and, you know, babies notice when things are different. And then on the flip side of that, but they absolutely love repetition. And so that's how what we're hardwired to do, is to seek, notice when things are new, but then really to seek out those familiar patterns. And what research did you talk about last week, Kate? Didn't you talk something about the newborns
that
measure
that they recognize
sucking?
If they played very, very rhythmic music and then either delayed or disrupted the beat that had been, you know,
familiar,
repeated, they startled. You know, they definitely, there was some obvious reaction, and they previously thought that a newborn, and I mean like 2 days in the nursery, newborn, got that. So, yes, so that is interesting. And I know, Laura, in practice you see this so often. Sometimes when I call them routines, and by that I just mean, you know, what we tend to do with this toy or that toy, or how we may introduce a topic, we do it over and over. And a lot of times the first time I do it, kids maybe aren't so interested. And then if I'll work it back in the next session and the next session, over time I think, as you know, they may like the routine, but what they really like is that it's predictable to them, and they begin to find that humorous, and you just begin it and they light up, and it's, they can't say it, but you know they're thinking, I know this one, you know,
You
see that really, and I know with my kids who were not language delayed when they were very young, there were certain books that I read over and over, and I think, we have 100 others, aren't you bored with that? And the answer was no. They loved, because they knew exactly all the words, even though they couldn't read them. They knew exactly what happened. And so use that to your advantage when you're working with kids with language delays.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Okay, so let's move on and talk a little bit about our routines. First of all, let's talk about playing outside. I cannot stress how important I think being outside is. And, Kate, from your developmental interventionist perspective, I know you like to talk about sensory motor learning and how, and I remember you talking about this early on in our shows, how sensory experiences and varying those sensory experiences really help children learn. I know I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you remember talking about that before?
I do.
You want to talk about that again? Because I think that's a great point, and I think that's the main reason that parents need to try to get outside and play every day. So go ahead.
I don't remember exactly what I said, but if I had to reiterate it, I'd say something about that I think it's terribly important for kids to be able to explore their environments, whether that be in the house, but also outside of the house, because kids are, I don't know that I've ever worked with a child in 10 years that didn't really love to be outside, you know.
Right.
They are just really in their element and happy. And there's so many different things for them to touch and to feel and that are different. And I see so many kids nowadays who really don't get a lot of outside time.
Right.
I don't know if that's a function of parents being so terribly busy or concerned about getting dirty, or I don't know what it is. All I know is I have a lot of kids that, you know, I don't say it, but I'd like to be able to say, has he been outside today? You know,
right.
You hear a lot of, oh, it's cold, it's wet, but really kids are pretty durable little things, and if you'll just wrap them up and take them out, they're really happy, and I just think it's terribly important for them to get all those sensory experiences that they can get outside, and it's a different perspective that is terribly beneficial. Really good daycares take their kids outside almost every day. Whether
I think it has to be really, really cold or drenching rain, you know, whatever it might be. I do think that daycares who are really, really concerned about child development and who really have read the research and try to really stay current with best practice guidelines always make that a routine part of their day, you know, no matter what time of year it is, whether it's 95 degrees, you know, they slather on the sunscreen and have them out and try to have them in a shaded area, but they are out every day.
Mm-hmm. I think there are just things that are inherent to being outside, whether it's things that they're touching or they tend to climb, they tend to run, so they're getting all of these, this different feedback to their little brains, whether they I mean, they obviously don't think of it that way, but that is what's happening. And I think, you know, refer to one author, that Carol Kranowitz, who does the Out of Sync Child, and then, the follow-ups to that. And she kind of was a biggie as far as talking about sensory integration and, you know, that and how it affects children's development. And she, when we saw her speak, Laura, she talked about when her kids, and she, I think, ran a preschool at one point anyway.
Yeah.
Her kids tended to be very good at fine motor skills. And when teachers who had her kids after she was, you know, they had gone on and gone further, would say, well, how do your kids have such good fine motor skills? And she laughed and said, we spend a lot of time outside. And I think
Absolutely.
That really is, yeah, that really is true, that that's something that we're quick to put the video in and turn the TV on and not really. My mother was right about that. She was always saying, go outside, go outside.
Yeah.
And we did spend so much time outside. And I just don't see kids, I think parents worry about their kids being taken, or I don't know what it is, but I don't think that kids, I bet if we did a study about how many hours kids spend outside today versus, say, 40 years ago, it's not half.
It's really not. And I really do remember, you know, as an older child leaving, you know, after my mom and dad went to work, especially in the summer, I would go outside right after I ate breakfast. I would come back inside filthy, but so giddy happy at lunchtime, wash off, eat, and then go do it again until dinner time. And literally spent the whole day outside, and so did my brothers, and so did all of our friends, because that's just what we did.
I was fortunate because we live in a nice neighborhood where there are a lot of kids, and my kids tend to spend quite a bit of time outside, but I don't see many kids that I work with, even in very nice areas, who really have that opportunity. I don't know. It's kind of something that's gone by the wayside, but we need to remember that's really, really important.
It is. It does just, those experiences do just really, you know, from a mom perspective, if you can think about all that running and jumping and climbing and touching dirt and feeling grass and feeling the wind blow on your face, you know, really helps pull your little body together so that you're at an optimal place for learning. And I really like to play with kids and see them for therapy after they've been outside, don't
mm-hmm.
you?
Yeah.
Because they are so ready at that point, one, to sit, because they've gotten to run and gotten to jump and, again, kind of gotten their wiggles out, and their little bodies and their little brains are kind of primed for learning at that point. I saw a story on the news, I guess it was last week, on one of the national newscasts that talked about how high schools now are bringing back PE, especially before kids have math, because there's so many studies right now that really link exercise and learning number concepts or mathematical concepts, their higher learning rates and retention rates for kids whose bodies have been exercised or moved or whatever you want to say right before they study math. So I thought that was great.
They're beginning to get that, aren't they?
Yeah.
Are they? Yeah, I know when my kids are in college, but when they were in grade school and then middle school and high school, with the emphasis on improving test scores, that was the first thing to go, you know, instead of having recess
twice a day. Yeah.
They had 5 minutes where they had to walk on the track, and that was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Anyway.
Well, the newscast really had gyms that looked better than places I've paid money to go to. So some schools are really kind of getting that message. So that's great. But we're a little bit off topic. Let's get back to the toddlers and preschoolers.
Okay.
But playing outside is really, really important. And before you go outside, I want to make some recommendations that you use this time to really target comprehension skills and following those 1 and 2 step directions. And we're talking about those really practical, functional things like, go get your shoes and bring them to me so we can put them on. Or saying, ooh, let's look outside. It looks like it's cold. I think it's cold today. What do you need to wear outside when it's cold? And then have them sit and process, think, coat. And then tell them, go get your coat and bring it to mom. And there are those opportunities to work in comprehension in your everyday routines. Again, if it becomes part of your routine and that repetition piece is there, you really are going to help them make those practical associations with not only what words and commands you're having them do, but also building in that compliance piece, that doing what mommy says, that obeying, you're kind of working on all of that together.
And what better time when a child is in, like I said, I've never known a kid who didn't love to be outside, so you know they're motivated to go, so you're
right.
not as likely as opposed to, okay, it's time to go to bed,
right.
you know, go put your toys away. That, you don't know that they're so motivated to do. But go outside? Mm-hmm.
You should hear the pitter-patter of little feet running through the house trying to find
they
a
They understand that they will do it. Yeah,
yeah,
that's important to have that motivation piece there, so.
That's a great thing to do. And the things that I like to do when I'm outside language-wise, especially for nonverbal children, is really to focus on having them imitate environmental noises. And that would be like if you hear a dog bark, you're going to say, listen, listen, what's that? What's that? A dog? What did the doggy say? And then you do your best bark, you know, which mine is woof, 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 woof. And then I always do a little pant. And panting is an awesome, it's not really a verbal thing, but a way to kind of get that early vocal play. And I have great luck with trying to get kids to pant like a dog. You use that trick too, don't you, Kate?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah, that's
definitely
a good one.
Mm-hmm.
But dogs, cats, I have one little guy right now, Kate, that you see, one of our little triplets, who is just crazy about when we have a toy, the little linguist, and we have the tree there, and it's the swish, swish, swish of the tree. And I was holding him last week or this week when I saw him and looking out the window and going, what did the tree say? And he, when I went whoosh, 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 like that little linguist toy, he just totally lit up. And again, he's making that connection, and you're making that more meaningful for him than looking at that little toy, that little object. So again, you want to use this opportunity to really create times that your toddler is attending to your vocalizations, even though they're not really words. And if you, and we're going to talk about this in a minute, but that's a great way too to get children who aren't really ready yet to really start to imitate, is start with some of those sounds. And being outside is a great way to do that because they're more engaged and it's still pretty novel. Other animal sounds I might try when I'm out there, I might try birds. You know, if you hear a car and a truck, you know, really do your lips. Or beep, beep, or room, room. You know, any kind of little vocalization that you can think to try to have them imitate when you're outside. And again, I love your point earlier when you said you might do something 1 week, and then the next time when you go back to see a child, you'll do it again. And it might take till that third or fourth week that you see that child to get them to want to try to engage and try to repeat you and do that little trick with you. So parents, don't give up. Even if you've done it, even, you know, don't do it 20 times or something in a row when you're out there, because you're totally going to lose your kids' attention. But day after day after day, build those things into your routine when you're outside playing.
Right. I might say tweak it a little, you know, try doing it a little louder, try exaggerating
yeah.
it a little more, try, but don't give up on it, because sometimes it's just, oh, that's novel, I'm listening, but it doesn't really mean much to me, and over time. And Laura, that, back to your using the environmental sounds or the vocalizations, I think, and of course you know this, but I'll just point it out, the thing about that, and you said, instead of trying to say words that kids aren't able to, that's one thing that if they hear those enough times, a number of times, and you're keeping it fun and goofy and loud and exaggerated, they are most often usually able to come close on some of those. And I think
yeah.
build that idea that, okay, maybe I can begin to imitate you if they get a few
right.
successes on the beep beeps or the wheeze as they're swinging or the whatevers, then it kind of builds their ability and confidence, and before long you can bump that up to some simple words.
Yeah, and all of the same sounds that you're making when you're doing those things really are composed of the same consonants and vowels that you use to make words. But again, it is less pressure. And I think the reason kids do that is just because it's so much more fun. And they, again, get all twinkly-eyed, and they really recognize it. And for some kids, it's just a lot less pressure, I think,
mm-hmm.
than trying to say a word that a mom or dad might be prompting. And I will just say, in my career, I hardly ever have kids go straight to words. if I truly get a kid that is nonverbal or non-vocal, I hardly ever have one that just starts popping out the words when he or she doesn't use these kinds of little vocal play tricks first. I mean, occasionally maybe, but almost always I tell parents, babies have to be noisy before they talk. And so if you're not hearing noise, if you're not hearing babbling, if you're not hearing animal sounds and car noises and all these kinds of exclamatory or play sounds, you're probably not going to hear words, because they really, you know, it kind of develops in that sequential order, I think. And certainly my experience with working with children, you know, for the past 15 years has certainly supported that.
I would totally agree. And so often I do see parents, you know, they want them to say cracker, they want them to say choo-choo train, they want them to
right.
say whatever, mother, you know, and it's like, oh.
Ooh, we've got some ground to cover before we get here.
How is it? We need to bring that bar down a little lower.
Yeah.
So that, you know, there's some chance he might get over it. And I understand
right.
they don't really understand it, but you certainly do, and you've taught me well, Laura, on that language front, and I get it now. So it's like you have to give them some chance of being able to imitate it. And if you're starting at those words and they have no sounds at all, except maybe to cry, I think you've set the bar too high.
Right. And if you have a kid, and I just recently evaluated a little boy like this, and you've talked about this before on the show, I think. He hardly ever makes a peep unless he is crying. He is starting to get a little more, this last time week that I saw him, you know, we've had the big ice storm in Kentucky, and the week before that, I think I missed his appointment because I had to get new tires, and the week before that, he had hand, foot, and mouth. It's been kind of one of those disaster beginnings.
It's been one of those months,
just,
yeah.
Yeah.
Goodbye,
where it's
January.
Just been weeks and weeks and weeks that I was supposed to see him and didn't see him. But what was my point about this? Oh, yeah, being loud. His mom said, because I asked her in the assessment, he was really laughing but hardly making any noise at all. And it's one of those where you look at him and his eyes are twinkly and his
mm-hmm.
face is smiling and you can see it, his little body kind of moving up and down, but nothing, no sound. And so we talked about how important that was to get him really verbalizing. And, you know, funny enough, his dad did walk in that day and say, I want him saying dada before you leave here today. You know, you think, oh, please.
How about father?
Yeah.
Think,
that's a good
so.
Comeback. I'm going to start saying that. I don't know if his dad would have gotten it, but I don't
Probably
know.
Probably not.
I don't know, but you do have to start with those environmental noises first.
And,
okay.
you know, for kids who have typical language, you know, it's not such an issue, but for kids who are language delayed, really, almost for whatever reason, obviously there is an issue, and
yeah.
setting the bar that high is setting yourself for failure.
Well, and then you're disappointed with everything, and there are some people that really think, okay, the speech therapist is here. She must have some magic talking dust. Before she leaves here, she's just going to sprinkle it on this kid, and he's going to be popping out all kinds of things, and they're kind of disappointed, you know, when...
Mm-hmm.
they're not talking that first day, and you do want to say, you know, and I've told parents this before, and I know I told a mother this a few weeks ago, you know, this is not magic. Really, there's a sequential thing that we have to do, and we have to kind of work through some of these things. I, you know, I'm pretty good at this, but this is not going to be like a divine healing or something while I'm here. You know, we're really going to have to work to get some of these things in order. It's not just as simple as poof, and you're going to talk. Okay. What other things do we want to talk about playing outside? We've talked about how to kind of work comprehension into that. We've talked about environmental noises. And I think the other thing to remember would be just to really narrate and give your child language for what he's doing. And I don't mean sit there and say, Michael's running to the tree right now. Michael's running back to Mom. Michael, look at the grass. You know, you certainly don't want to do that kind of narration, but you want to keep it peppy and fun. And your point about keeping it, if he's nonverbal and nonvocal, that means you're going to want to do lots of just single words and lots of those little sounds that we talked about. If he is starting to pop out some words, of course you're going to want to really, really label the things that he's interested in and, the, again, the things that he's doing. If he's starting to do lots of single words, then you're going to want to bump it up a little bit and label some things with simple, short phrases. So I love reminding parents to, again, stay one step ahead. Think about, you know, where he is right now and what he's currently doing, and you be just one little bitty baby step above that. Do you want to say anything else about playing outside before we move on?
Oh, I think you've done a nice job, Laura. I would say it just kind of meets your child where they are developmentally. If you have a kid who's into putting things in and taking things out, great. Give them a buck and let them pick up the rocks and talk about rock. Ooh, rock, rock, more. Get more rocks. Make a
game.
If
you live in Kentucky this week, you're going to want to be picking up all those sticks that fell from that ice storm last week.
There you go. Sticks. And kids love that. You know, just give them your bucket from inside the house with the handle and let them have at it and kind of join them in their play and make a big deal out of it, and you will have a happy child who's probably going to be saying rock before you know it.
Yeah, or in.
Mm-hmm.
Or uh-oh as he pours them out for the 15th time all over the grass. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good cognitive thing. I'm glad you chimed in with that. All right, let's talk about being in the car. I think having singing time when you're in the car is a fun thing to do. I certainly did that with my own children. I have lots of clients right now whose moms tell me that they're more vocal when they're riding in the car than any other time. And again, I think it plays to that sensory input that they're getting from the, you know, from being bounced around in that car seat back there. So I think singing is a fun thing to do in the car. A lot of parents like to buy CDs and play them in there. I think it's better, though, if mom or dad just sing themselves.
I would agree. And please, I'm doing the soapbox thing yet again tonight. Lay off the DVDs in the car. How many cars do you see driving down? Just your, you know, I understand if you're driving cross country, you might use a DVD or two, but just, you know, going from preschool,
for carpool,
preschool to the grocery store, they have to. There's got to be, the kids are glowing because I sound old, don't I? But I'm so glad that they didn't have all the DVD players in the cars when my kids were little, because who knows, I might have done it. But it just almost breaks my heart, because I think that is an ideal opportunity to really talk with your kids when they're in one place and you're in one place and you have this shared experience. And whether you're talking about the truck that's next to you or the airplane that's above you or McDonald's that's in front of you or whatever it is, or doing that singing where you're, you know, taking it nice and slow and singing the songs they're familiar with. But the TV in the car is really,
Yeah, it's on my list of pet peeves. And I know parents do it because it's convenient and they do think, oh, gosh, I don't want to have to listen to a bunch of fuss. But, oh, you're just creating lots of bad habits, and you really are missing out on times when you could really talk. And, again, there's a big difference between driving 10 hours to see the grandparents and driving 10 minutes to pick up your elementary-aged child.
Mm-hmm.
So I would use that only sparingly. Again, I think you can do some of those funny vocalizations in the car. Oh, you know, you could do, listen to mommy's car, how does that sound? Here it goes, you know, or talk about the big trucks, or look, there's a bus, and then you could sing Wheels on the Bus.
Right.
You know, there are lots of opportunities there for language time. And I think our kids right now, we have too much zone out time anyway. So occasionally I'll talk to mom about this, and she'll say, gosh, the car is, you know, I really like it when they're doing their own thing in the car, because then I know that they're thinking, I can talk on the cell phone or I can think or listen to my music or whatever. But I think a parent of a language delayed child really needs to make the most of those opportunities. And certainly driving in the car is something we all do every day. So I would try to use that time more constructively. And do singing.
So that might be the, you know, the 20 minutes there and the 20 minutes back may be the 40 minutes that you're really able to really target it. And because you're so busy the rest of the time, or kids are going here and there. And so really that's a great chance because you're stuck there. So use it.
Yeah, your captive audience, and you, especially if you have a wild kid who's really a sensory seeker, who's really running, jumping, climbing the whole rest of his day, when he's belted into that car seat, might be the only time that you get. Other things that I do with children who are nonverbal and kind of nonvocal would be the fake sneeze and cough, and in the car would be a good time to really do that, and that would be something to really kind of make part of your routine. And, you know, I do the big ha-ha-ha-ha-choo, and kids think that is so funny. And so that would be a good time for you to kind of work on those little funny things. Fake cough, imitating a cough. Babies usually as young as 6 or 7 months will try to do that if their speech is developing typically. So that would be something that you could try. Again, I would. The animal sounds are always kind of a favorite, and little boys and girls alike both like to try to imitate those. And the car would certainly be, again, a good time that you could practice those little things. All right, let's talk a little bit about the songs. Sometimes parents get kind of stuck on they don't remember a lot of songs from their childhood. Songs that I recommend, this is in an article from the website, teachmetotalk.com, and you can find it in the article called Social Games for Babies and Toddlers. And again, there's some ideas for some little finger plays in here as well. My favorite ones are my favorite songs and little finger plays are Itsy Bitsy Spider, Wheels on the Bus, Open Shut Them. Do you sing that, Kate?
I really don't. No, I kind of forget about it. I know it, but I don't use it.
Well, I like it because kids really love doing the whole open and close their hands. And it's a motor movement that even kids who are pretty challenged motorically can usually do. So that's a little song that I like. Lots of parents will remember, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. And you could do Stomp Your Feet. I like to do If You're Happy and You Know It, Scream, because kids can always do that one, or, you know, lots of kids can do that one. That one's a, kind of a fun one to do. Ring Around the Rosies is one that we always do with our little friends.
Oh, yes.
Some kids really like Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes, but I found that that needs to be a kid who's moving along. That wouldn't be an early one that I would do with a child who is nonverbal or nonvocal, but that's one that kids like. Kate and I have a little song that we're doing right now, the Marching, Marching song. We've kind of changed it from the Walking, Walking song, and that's on the DVD. I don't think I should sing those tonight on the podcast. But if you want to check out some of those, I think some of those might be on the video clips from the DVDs that are on the website, but you could take a look at some of those. Kate, have I talked about all of your favorite songs that you sing with kids? Oh, Row, Row Your Boat. We do that one a lot.
No, I'll tell you one you haven't mentioned, Laura, that I certainly learned from you is your Where, Oh, Where, Oh, Where Is, whatever.
Yeah.
I
sing
use that
5 or 6 times a day. Yeah.
I use that. I see that when I do use it, I usually use it, one, when I've either hidden something or put it away and I'm trying to get them to look for it, but also just kind of to keep them with me a little better. If I'm kind of seeing that little Johnny's looking a little bored, or he's starting to, I'll, just like I use my mix, mix, mix on the parts, I'll use that to kind of bring them back, and they kind of, you know, you see that little twinkle again because, oh, I'm familiar with that song and I like it. And so, and you just, or I do, and I think you do, I might say, where, oh, where, oh, where is Ball? You know, whatever I'm looking for. It doesn't. Sometimes I'll do a person. Sometimes I'll do an object. It really doesn't matter. But I use that one of yours a lot.
I do that, too. And I do that, and we've talked about this in the last couple of weeks, with the hiding the object in the kids' clothes. I do that a lot. And I do think that little song is on Teach Me to Talk, the DVD where I'm singing it. I think it's with Max, and we're.
I don't think you could get through a whole DVD without doing it. I don't think you could.
I don't think I could either. You know, my new addiction is Facebook, and one of my friends, I sang a little bit when I was in high school and college, and one of my friends asked me if I was still singing, and I thought, yeah, but not in the way that you mean it. I sing all day, every day, but I think you're asking me about a different question here.
Uh-huh.
So that's pretty funny.
Another one I use, which is not necessarily a song, but kind of related to that, where, oh, where, oh, where, is I call things. I'll say, Ball, where are you?
Yeah, I do the where are you all
the time. And I have so many kids who will get, where are you? very early, you know, before they should as far as phrases, but they'll pop out, "Where are you?" Because I use that one a lot. And again, it helps them kind of stay with you, you know, pay a little bit more attention when, for those kids who would just as soon be running around the room, but yet they're still with you. If you work some of those in, they tend to want to stay with you a little bit longer.
Absolutely. And we do have so many children that respond to music way doing hand motions and that in little songs. That's what we get probably before we even get some other things. I have a little girl right now that, again, I'm the takeover therapist for. She started out with somebody else, and it didn't really work out. But she her receptive language or how she understands is really, really delayed. And so just to sit and talk with her and play with her, you know, she's getting better. But, boy, does her demeanor, her affect, you know, how she looks totally changes when I start to sing. And so her mother has, you know, said, "Gosh, I find myself just singing to her all day long. I make up songs about what we're doing." Oh, another one I sing all the time is, you know, "This is the way we wash our hands, wash our hands, wash our hands," and change that for whatever we're doing. You know, "This is the way we put on shoes, put on shoes, put on shoes." So all of that, you know, you can even just make up silly little things as you are going through your daily routine, especially when you have a kid that's kind of hooked by music. All right, let's see. Let's talk about things in the grocery store, ways we could work on language in the grocery store. And, I think parents, I hate when I see parents, and I wrote an article about this last year when I was first getting the website up and going, about parents that are totally oblivious to their children when they're in these public places. And I wrote an article about the mom that had the baby who was crying covered up in a little car seat with a blanket on top of her. And she was talking on the cell phone the whole entire time, and that baby was really, really crying. And not only did she not ever acknowledge her, she didn't even take the blanket off her face. And I just felt horrible for that baby. Or you'll see parents who, again, are so consumed with what they're doing that they're really ignoring their children when they're in Home Depot, when they're in Kroger. And, again, you're missing lots of opportunities if you're not really keeping your kid engaged and really talking about what you're doing while you're going through the grocery store. With my children, you know, I kind of kept the running commentary going. But, you know, when you're in the produce, say, "Where are the bananas? We need bananas." You could sing, you know, where are bananas, and really keep them with you and looking around and trying to find it. And then when you find it, you know, make a big deal about, look, banana, and have them try to imitate that word. Or, again, you could be silly, like Kate and I routinely are with, "What do we do with bananas? We eat it. Yum, 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 yum." You know, again, kind of keep them pulled in at that point. Do you want to give any grocery store tips, Kate?
I don't know specifically, really. I think the important thing is to kind of, again, get your groceries in the cart, but follow their lead to the best extent possible, and label, talk about it, even if it's you're just making the sound of the cart, you know, anything to keep them kind of with you and not screaming and climbing and doing a backflip out of there. So.
Right. And I think children who are just starting to learn to say hi or bye to people love that in the grocery store, to be able to say bye-bye, 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 you know, with the 50 people that you navigate past when you're in the grocery store. That's a great time to kind of practice that too. All right. I want to go ahead and talk about how to use pictures with children. I have lots of kids right now that I've just gotten that really aren't calling mom and dad or naming mom and dad. And we talked about last week, and we talked about too before, when we were playing that "Where's Mama" game. And so if you don't know what that refers to, search that on the website at teachmetotalk.com. You know, type in "mama game" or listen to the podcast from last week. But another thing that I have parents do is to really label family pictures and do a big deal about pointing to mama, you know, "Where's dada? Let's find dada," and pointing to dada. And again, we talked about last week when we were at dinner playing the whole "Where's dada? Where's mama? Where's sissy?" those kinds of games where you're really labeling people in your child's environment. One thing that I think they do now in better child care facilities, too, is really have family pictures available for children. Don't you see that, Kate, when you're in the better ones?
Mm-hmm.
Not when you're at the posh posh, but when you're in the better ones. I probably shouldn't have said that on the air. But
no, probably not, but it probably doesn't matter. So we're probably safe on that. But no, yeah, that's kind of in vogue, and it's a nice thing. You know, they'll have pictures of the child with the siblings and a picture with mom and dad and, you know, whatever, grandma if they want. Like, I think they kind of leave it open to the families. But, yeah, it's sweet because then it gives them something to share about home, and the caregiver can talk to them about, you know, where's your mommy? Who's that? Grandma?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I, with my children, and I've recommended this to parents over the years too, like those little cheap photo albums that you can get at Dollar Tree or somewhere, and just stick a couple, again, not your prized portraits in there, but photographs that you don't mind getting torn or have to replace, and the way that we all have pictures on our computers and can kind of print those out nowadays, that's a little easier to do too. But a little photo album with pictures of people that are important in your child's life would be a fun thing to do. One other thing that I did for my children a lot is to make little take pictures and then make little books about their day, or especially if we went on trips or if we had snow days, took a little series, and again, not 50 pictures, but a little series of 4 or 5 pictures, and then would glue them on construction paper. Now you could probably get those cheap little laminators that are $30 if you were going to do this routinely and, you know, kind of laminate those. But that's a fun little thing to do, is make up your own story. And my children loved talking about that. And I have a couple of little clients who go to better preschool facilities in Louisville, and they routinely send home books about the children that they've made. And that's a great opportunity for kids to be able to name their little friends, and for mom and dad to see what they've done while they've been at preschool, and to really get to start to talk about things that have happened when mom and dad aren't necessarily there. And if you have a child who, again, won't answer questions, and I think we talked about this a little bit last week, using a picture as a prompt, or doing the whole, you know, ask the preschool teacher what they did in school today, so that when you get in the car and say, what did you do at school today, you have a little bit to go on so that you can get those choices. But using pictures is a nice way to do that. And I routinely will take pictures of children when I see them at daycare or preschool, and we'll make little books about that for mom and dad to be able to talk about at home.
Yes, and we educators like to say that's using visual support. And it really is a nice, and so easy with digital cameras and, you know, so many people with printers at home. And like you said, it doesn't matter about the quality. They don't care if it's glossy or pretty or fancy or perfect. But to just have that so that there's this visual reminder for the child who can't say, I played outside, Daddy. You know.
Right, or we did Play-Doh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ladies, your caller, your guest is here.
Oh, hi, Terry.
Hi, good evening.
How
good
are
evening.
You?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, let me introduce Terry Kaminsky-Peterson, who, again, is a speech-language pathologist, and she has just recently published a great book that she was kind enough to send me called The Big Book of Exclamations. And, Terry, why don't you tell us a little bit about your book and how you use that, and just give us your whole
bio.
Yeah, there you go. thank you. I'm having word retrieval problems tonight. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, thank you, ladies. I appreciate the opportunity to do this, and I really enjoy being able to share with other speech pathologists and parents this great new book that I've put together. And just like you gals, I'm a practicing pediatric speech pathologist with about 23 years experience, so this book has sat in my head for quite a while, and I finally decided to get it out there, because everything I've outlined in the book is what we do every day when we use books with children. And now we've put a book out there that can explain it to parents so they can easily do that themselves. And we're really, I should say, I'm plugging the book as a fun educational book that is designed to promote speech sound development and imitation of gesture sounds and words. And we do that because, unlike most books, our book doesn't have a story to read. Instead, along the bottom of each page or illustration, we've written prompts which teach the parents and caregivers how to act out the illustrations and interact with their child using gestures, sounds, or words, depending on the level their child is at. We also have a lot of information intended to help parents understand speech and language development, as you do on your wonderful website, of course, and we also have resources for those seeking advice. And if you'd like, I can certainly walk you through a little bit of a book so you can understand how it's laid out. Okay, well, when you open the book, you're greeted with a welcome, and then we tell parents to stop and make sure and read this page first, because it's really important they understand how the book works. Otherwise, they could be confused, because we remind them that they need to take some time to look through this. The prompts are meant to be read silently, so they can't just start reading this to their child.
Yeah.
So we remind them, just take 10
they're
minutes.
They're a big do not read.
That's right. That's right. So we remind them, just enjoy and take some time to read this. And once you've done that, you won't have to visit any of that again. You'll get the hang of how to use the book.
Right.
When you turn the page, we talk about getting started, that they should take a look inside. In addition to the prompts which guide their play in the illustrations, scattered throughout the pictures, they'll find fun sounds and exclamations they can say as they point and pretend with the book. We also remind parents to use the gestures and the sounds, and in time, watch as their child begins to imitate. Then eventually, we want the parents to let the child take the lead and let the parents sit back and watch as their child progresses from using the simple gestures to sounds and then words. I mean, what a pleasure and a treat watching your child progress through those stages. And we also remind parents that they should keep in mind that the ultimate goal of this book is for the parents to feel successful using books with their child, and for the child to feel successful because they can participate in story time. They can't say a long story or make long sentences like there are in books, but they can pretend to knock on a door. They can pretend to throw a ball. They can pretend to touch and pop bubbles. And parents are encouraged to use the book at their level the child is at.
That sounds great, Terry.
Yeah, we're real excited about it. We also then list tips for using the book that sound just like all the things you talk about on your websites for using exaggerated facial expressions and voice changes and intonation. We also remind parents that we have to encourage their child's attempts, and we need to praise them even if their sounds and gestures are not exact, because effort matters.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You're a girl after our own heart, Terry.
I am. We love speech pathologists, don't we?
We do.
Not universally, but some of them are great.
You know, Kate's a DI, Terry. I don't know what your state, what would be the comparable term for your state. Her master's degree is in early childhood development, and so sometimes she rags on us speech therapists because apparently we're not all created alike. And sometimes she finds one that's not really on our page, but we feel like you are. And I thank you so much for sending me this book. I just love it. And let me just tell you that I think the artwork is beautiful.
Wonderful. I will definitely pass that on to our illustrator, absolutely, and let him know that.
Now, Terry, where would somebody get this book? I mean, if a parent's listening and they have a child who really, to date, hasn't shown a huge interest in books, and they're thinking, a book that my child might love. Where do I get it? How does that work?
Well, they can visit our website, and the website is just the name of the book, The Big Book of Exclamations, and we will be selling it online. The book just came off the press, so our e-store is not up and running this minute, but it should be in the next few days, and I'm going to encourage parents to go ahead and visit the website. Email me. They can email me from the website with their email address, and I will send them an email as soon as the website's up and running. It could be tomorrow, it could be Saturday, but I will remind them when it's ready. Otherwise, they certainly can call us. We are taking phone orders, and our number is listed on our website, and we'd be happy to return their call and get them a book ordered. We encourage them also to email us and let us know that they heard about the book on your website or through your podcast, and we'd be delighted to send them the book with no charge for shipping and handling.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much for doing that for our listeners and our readers. I'm going to put a post about this
on the website as well. So if someone didn't happen to listen to the podcast today, they could also take advantage of that. And listen, I did want to say that I think this book would be great, Terry, for parents who this kind of thing doesn't come naturally for. And don't
Absolutely.
You think that, is that, I mean, don't you see that in your practice as well? You have parents that are just kind of intuitive about this thing, and then you have parents that don't get it at all.
Absolutely. Or if one of the parents participates usually in the therapy session, then the other parent might not really be on track with how to encourage their child. And I was really excited. One of my moms came in the other day and said she handed the book to her husband, and they have a little two-year-old who's been coming for therapy for a handful of weeks, and she told her husband, now, read everything it says and follow the instructions. And he said, okay. And she said, after about 10 minutes, he put his little boy up on his lap, and she looked at me and said, he sounded like a speech teacher. It was beautiful. She said he was doing all the sounds and the gestures, and her little boy was imitating him like crazy, and they had so much fun playing with the book.
Well, that,
so that was
so great.
Really neat feedback.
Well, and I do think it's a script, and there are parents who really do need, you know, there are some parents who can get this just by hearing about it, like hearing us talk about it on the podcast or maybe listening to a speech session. There are some parents who can read it from the website and get it, but I think a tool like this for a parent who really feels kind of out of their element is just such a great resource for a parent to have. And so especially for those parents, I want to encourage you to go to Terry's website again. Give us the website again, Terry.
It's the title of the book. It's thebigbookofexclamations.com.
Okay, and tell us how you came up with that name.
Well, you know, mostly because it's filled with lots of exclamations. And I, with my kids that are just starting to vocalize and use simple sounds, I always encourage parents to use these fun exclamations. We do a lot of uh-oh and oh, man, and whoa and wee. And we use all those fun sounds, and we call them exclamations. And so I use that word a lot in my practice, and I have for many years. And so I thought, I've got to title it what it is to me.
Yeah, and you sound just like us when you do those things. I don't know
if
you've listened to the podcast before, but that's exactly what Kate and I talk about, and we've even talked about some of that today. I don't really use the term exclamations, but I think that's exactly what it is. These are exclamatory words.
Absolutely, and we also remind parents, too, that if this is how your child likes to play with the book, and if you feel successful doing it with this, using these kind of techniques, then use these techniques with other books.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Use them with all the other books that you have with your child. You don't have to just use them with this book. So it teaches them to use these techniques with many other books.
Well, and the thing that I like about it, and the reason I wanted to do it, to talk to you on this particular show, is last week and this week we're talking about facilitating language in our daily routines at home, and that's exactly kind of the schedule for your book. The first cute little page that you use with your baby is wake up, good morning. And so it talks about that. And then the next page talks about eating. And then the next page talks about getting ready to go. So again, you've taken all the daily schedule activities and you put these nice words with it. And I would want to encourage and I do plan to use this with children on my caseload. And actually, I had a visit with a dad today who's a doctor, a radiologist, and he said to me, I cannot get my little boy to sit through a book. And
correct.
I was thinking, boy, when I get this book from Terry, I'm going to have a tool to be able to take it back to him next week and say, okay, here's what I want you to do, and this is what we're going for. When you're doing books, not trying to get him to listen to a 10-page story that he cares absolutely nothing about.
That's right, and that's where the book came from also, because for years I've listened to parents say, I didn't know you could use a book that way. I thought you had to read the story.
Right.
And with active little ones, they're not interested in those long stories, but we can help them participate successfully by changing our techniques with our book.
Right. And the other thing that I wanted to mention that I think was actually my original point before I digressed is that I would encourage parents, too, to use these same kinds of words and exclamations as they're doing those same routines with their child. And, again, to help them make those connections. And I can just see our little friends lighting up when mommy and daddy start to do the same kind of routines in a real-life activity that they've done when they've read the book.
Absolutely.
What part of the country are you in, Terry?
I am in beautiful Minnesota.
Oh, I was trying to, you have, to my ear, you have a little bit of an accent. I was trying to figure it out, so I just.
I am from Minnesota, and it's actually warm out today. It got to 30. We think it feels like summer.
That is pretty good for Minnesota. Hey, that was warm in Louisville, Kentucky today, for a matter of fact.
It was. We've been really cold. We had an ice storm last week, and it was not above freezing for days and days and days. And then last Sunday, we had a brief warm-up. It was 53 was the high, and people were wearing shorts. And I thought, this must be what it's like to live up north, because Kentucky is still, again, Kentucky is the north compared to where I'm originally from in Mississippi.
But
it did feel very, very warm. 53 has never felt as good as it did last Sunday when it was 20 for days on end.
That's right.
Well, you want to tell us anything else about your book, Terry?
Well, I just encourage people to go to the website. Almost everything I talked about today is somewhere in the website, so they can review what we talked about either on the podcast again or on your website, or they can come to our website to see, to view a few of the illustrations and learn more about the book there. And they can give us a call if they're wanting to order, or like I said, they can email us and give us their email address, which of course we would have, and we'll let them know the minute the shopping cart's up and running. And like I said, we thought it would be ready yesterday and today, and we're still working out.
Laura, you're kind of familiar with that issue, aren't you?
Oh,
my goodness. Here's the good news, Terry, that a lot of our listeners actually listen, to the recorded version of the show. So by the time they hear this, hopefully it will be up and running, and they can go to your website and get it if they're interested.
Absolutely.
It's a great idea. You should be proud of yourself. I'm surrounded by people who actually do what they plan to do.
It's taken a while, but thank you. I've finally done what I planned to do.
That's awesome.
And congratulations. Let me tell you, I so understand having an idea and then getting it, all the details worked out so that it actually comes together. And my whole life this past year has been built on waiting, 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 and all those delays come up that you really don't anticipate for your project. But congratulations, Terry. It's a great book. I plan on using it with my clients and, more importantly, passing it on to our readers at TeachMeToTalk.com.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for
being
here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks. Nice to talk to you. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
That was fun.
Don't you know? I mean, it's neat that she got it done, because it's easy to think about them. It's really hard to get them done, and those ideas are things that seem obvious to us but not necessarily obvious to parents.
Again, I do think that this will be a great tool, and I can't wait to show you the book, Kate. I hope I remember to bring it tomorrow when we have our little powwow planned, so that you can take a look at this, because I do think it's a great book. She didn't talk about the price, but it's, gosh, you know what? I think I might not ought to say that, because what if the information I have is wrong? But I think it's pretty cheap, so I would encourage parents again.
But if people get it here, then they get free shipping and handling, so that's
added
bonus of doing it.
Yeah, but it's the bigbookofexclamations.com, and I liked her, and again, just everything that I've read about her on her website, and then when I talked with her briefly before the show and then reading the book, I think she's our kind of speech-language pathologist and certainly understands what works to get children started with early language and early sound development. And again, she's got the right idea about not necessarily reading a boring book or holding your child down and making them do something that they're obviously not interested in. And the reason that I did think that her project fit in so nicely tonight is because it talks about in the book those daily activities. And you could, if you're the kind of mom and dad that need it in black and white and need a script, this would be a great tool for you to have. If you're the kind of parent that needs to see it, I want to encourage you to check out the DVDs that are on the website. Right. We have Teach Me to Talk, which talks about expressive language strategies. And you can see the same kinds of things that Kate and I talk about here on the show to help your child learn to use language. And then my receptive language DVDs are called Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1 and 2. And there are some instructions and a little checklist on the website to help you decide which of those would be the better choice for your child. All right, Ms. Kate, what do you want to say to wrap up tonight?
I don't know. I'm glad it's going to be 60 this weekend. I hope to get a little sensory integration feedback outside. And
that'll go with your new nice tan, won't it?
Yeah, that's mostly on my hands. Thank you very much. But anyway, I guess that's it. Hope you listened, and give us a call next week if you're listening this week.
That sounds great. And the things that we use, the resources that I use tonight to talk about the daily routines things, and especially those little hints if your child won't imitate words, and talking about begin with imitating movements and sounds during play. That's the exact title of an article that's on the website. And then the other one is called Social Games for Babies and Toddlers, and that lists not only the songs that we talked about tonight, but again, my favorite play routines that I use with children during therapy sessions to help them engage with me socially. And again, one more time, I'm going to say that social interaction is the foundation for language, and what better way to do that than with little games and little songs with your young child who's having difficulty learning how to communicate. And on that note, I think we're done.
Okay.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye.